This evening, I'll be speaking about judging, comparing, and fixing. Anybody know any of those mind states? Anybody know any one of those three? Oh, okay. Somebody does. It's a couple people do. Okay, good. Good, good. Yeah. I got the call to back up Heather Sundberg late in the week. And so I'm teaching a class on judging, comparing, and fixing, actually working with judging, comparing, and fixing. Not actually, I don't think we need additional skills in judging or comparing or fixing. We come pretty much hardwired with that. But so I'll be sharing some of that this evening. And I think what I'll do is I'll start with like some of the definitions of them so we can make sure we're on the same page, and how to recognize them. And I guess, perhaps some of the ways that they plug into the Dharma and how to work with them. So judging could be judging ourselves or others or things, right? It's really the kind of those three possibilities. And there are two kind of, I'll call them valences, but two possibilities. Either good, you're judging something as being good or bad. And what I think is really useful, actually, with all of these unwholesome states, is getting clear, getting to know better, not perfectly, but getting to know better the felt sense of that energy, right? So that we can know what that helps us to recognize it. So easy in the mind to kind of lose track of that and then not be able to recognize it when it's happening, and then we're caught and lost. There is also a similar factor of mind, maybe, that's similar but different, that may be kind of more a wholesome expression of that, which is discerning, right? So being able to discern what's wholesome and unwholesome, being able to discern what's skillful and unskillful, that's really useful. That's not judging. There's no judging in that, right? It is the wise discernment of what's going to lead forward and what's not. There's a discourse in which the Buddha talks about, it was before he was enlightened, and he said, I realized that I could put all of my thoughts into two categories, thoughts that led towards ill will, harm, greed, hatred, that kind of thing. Those all went in one bucket. All of those thoughts led to harm for himself, for others, and hurt him in terms of progressing on the path. And then in the other category were all thoughts of generosity, kindness, compassion, things like that. All of those were forward leading, right? So he was not judging those, but he was discerning. This is going to lead me forward. No, that's not going to help. Yeah. He didn't say, you're being bad. You're being bad for having those thoughts, Bodhisattva. Okay. Comparing. Comparing, you could be comparing yourself to how you were previously, to others, to some ideal of how it should be, right? That our mind makes up, right? And we can do this a lot. And there are three valences with that: better than, worse than, or same as, right? Same as is still problematic because we're still caught in that egoic mindset of trying to figure out where we are in this ranking system. that part of the ego or that committee member is still kind of in the driver's seat. It still has its hands on the steering wheel. And then, just as with judging, there can be just as the Buddha was doing, we can discern in that way as well. And that's useful. Even in daily life, if you're driving down the road, it's helpful to know a red light from a yellow light from a green light. We're not saying the red light is bad, or, well, maybe we are, I don't know. But actually, no. We need, right? We need that. What we need is people to honor that kind of shared cultural agreement that we have, that at a green light you go, when it turns yellow you slow, when it's red you stop there, right? And that's not, we can be completely outside of that judging, comparing, and fixing mind state and still do that. Fixing. You could be fixing yourself or others or things. It's that kind of mindset of noticing what needs to be fixed, and then that kind of impulse, I can fix this. This attitude of correcting, making things better, improving. There's nothing wrong with improving. The issue is, we want to pay attention to that felt sense. Is there some compulsion there? Okay. Is there the, if only this were better, or if only this were like this, then it would be okay. Is there some, are we fixing as a way of not being with things as they actually are? Right. These are expressions of the roots of unwholesome action, expressions of greed, aversion, delusion, the egoic mind, the committee, however you want to term it, trying to make things happen, thinking it knows what's best, thinking that it can improve on experience. And if we just pay attention and do what it says, then things are going to work out well. In meditation, sometimes we can really get caught in comparing myself to how I was previously, or somebody, you feel like you're doing well, and then somebody asks a question after the meditation, and it's clear they were having this experience that's way beyond what you were. Oh no, what's going on here? Yeah, so we want to get bought out of that committee member, that part of the ego's take on what's happening there. So recognizing these, super important. And this is something that the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught recognizing wholesome mind states and unwholesome mind states. He had to discern which ones were going to be forward leading and which ones were going to be backward leading. We're going to take him off the path and not lead towards the final goal. Okay. And even after his full awakening, the Buddha would see difficult mind states clearly. I see you, Mara. Right? He would recognize them and call them out as they were. So it's an important skill. In terms of recognizing them, there can be some variety in terms of how they manifest for different people. They could arise as thoughts, as emotions, or just kind of as energies in the body mind. So you can see for yourself what works there for you. And just, we want to, mindfulness does not judge, but mindfulness can know judging. Mindfulness has no problem with knowing judging. It will be a happy workhorse to help you plow the fields of knowing judging and comparing and fixing. But it doesn't judge at all. So we just want to get to know these better. I was in a group with a number of a Dharma group with a number of teachers that was feeling, we're going around doing check-ins, and I was feeling intimidated, anxious, small, caught in doubt. It was my turn to check in. I started checking in, and then I realized and kind of blurted out, "Oh, I'm comparing. That's what this is." And then with that realization, it really shifted things for me. And then I was able to do my check-in from what my experience is, not from a place of comparing, of being better than or worse than or same as, just from here was my experience now. Philip has his vows of renouncing judging, comparing, and fixing that he does on retreat. I don't. He really warns people against doing the three of these in daily life. Yet he does encourage engaging with them in some way. So choosing one of them, and then we can work with that in some more focused way. So it may be that we take just one of these and we work with it with our significant other. From in that first hour when they get home from work in the evening, or the first hour after work in the evening, if people are not going into work these days, or if the work days are done, or when we go about our shopping, or when we're driving, or something like that. We find some way to focus that a bit so that we're not trying to attend to all of these. And when one arises, we let go, as Philip says, as best we're able. Right? No better than that. Letting go does not mean getting rid of. If the mind has that energy of trying to get rid of judging, comparing, or fixing, then we're just strengthening that mind state. We're simply cultivating the hindrances there. So we need to do letting go like letting be, right? Like the open palm. Yeah. Oh. You know, I don't need to hold on to it. I can let go. I open the palm and it goes when it's ready. Yeah. So for you all, let's just do a show of hands. What would you say is your main one of these three, your default? Judging, comparing, or fixing. So what I'll do is I'll ask you to raise your hand. You can do that by going down to reactions and choose raise your hand if judging is your default. Oh, yes, yeah, Sarah's just raising her hand physically. You can do it that way or you can do it in Zoom, whatever is easier. Great, we've got some judges. Okay. Linda, did you want to weigh in? Okay. How about comparing? Cool. Okay, great. I've been noticing I do a lot of this. I really always thought I was a judger. Judging might be a little bit my default, but I'm waking up to some of my comparing now. How about fixing? Okay, Jan, Vita, Kylie, great. Okay, wonderful. Okay, so Philip's vows that he'll do on retreat are for the duration of this retreat. I renounce judging mind as best I am able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce comparing mind as best I'm able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce fixing mind as best I'm able. So you can, if you want, take one of those and whittle it down so it's applied to a slice of your life and not the whole thing. And over time, we can cultivate a wiser relationship with these so that we're clear about, you know, what am I believing right now? What am I taking to be true? Getting the felt sense of that. You know, the egoic mind, you guys know Dana De Palma, or many of you know Dana De Palma. She talks about sweet ego. She refers to those kind of troublesome parts as sweet ego, which I actually find really nice. It kind of frames it in a way that's not that doesn't put me in opposition to it, right? I don't feel like I have to get rid of anything, but sweet ego, oh, it's just sweet ego coming up in this way, telling us that things are not right and that it's going to fix things. It's going to get things better if we just trust what it's saying. Yeah. So being mindful of it really helps. And as we get more in tune with the felt sense of it over time, we can feel that. And then can we use mindfulness to be non-reactive towards that reactivity? Sometimes we can't, but sometimes we can, right? Another thing to look for in the early years of my practice, it wasn't just judging that went on, but there were multiple layers of judging. I would realize I was judging, and then there was judging for the judging, and judging for judging the judging, and judging for, you know, it's like 7-8 layers thick, you know. And over time, actually, it was something that I was actually able to see a distinction over time, that some of these layers would fall away, and oh, there'd only be one or two or three layers of judging. Oh, wow. So that can happen over time. Joseph Goldstein, in one of his books, for me in the early years of my practice, judging was very painful. It was so many layers, and it was very hard for me to get unhooked from it in any way. And what he did is he did this practice of, in a meditation, just start counting the judging. And he did like these little kind of mini chapters, little mini sections on these different things. So this one on judgment was called Judgment 500. Just start counting. One. Oh, there's another judgment. Two, three. And he said, you know, I would get, when I started doing that, I could actually get into the hundreds in a single sit. And then it just, the judging, the ookiness of it just kind of fell away. It was just judgment. There was no, it was impersonal. And there was no real harm in it. So that was a real milestone. That was something that was really helpful for me. Okay, any questions so far? Questions, comments? Yes, Katie, please.
I hope this is a question. I mean, it kind of comes in and out of focus. I said I thought that judging was like the big one, but I've been aware of that for such a long time now because of Philip and the Dharma that I have the thoughts. They don't have any, most of them don't have any juice, but I don't want the thoughts, but there they are. So I don't do anything with them. I just, sometimes I feel bad about it, but mostly I just go, oh yeah, that's that. But they're still there. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if that's like, if I'm more into the comparing thing or the judging thing. So that's my question, if that makes any sense.
So was the question around?
Well, I mean, you said, you know, which one is the one that you have? Yeah. Most? And I thought I put judging because the I have more judging thoughts than comparing thoughts.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The comparing has a little more juice, I think.
Yeah. You know, so I think what one of the things that's helpful is just knowing where you are now. And at this point in time, you've worked with judging a lot, so that judging, by and large, has less energy behind it or something.
Yeah.
Whereas the comparing, you know, Philip did his renunciations, his now I can't. Does anybody remember what they are? I'm blanking on them. I know two of them. Bill, it looks like you know. Bill, please.
One of them is renouncing being star of your own show.
Star of your own movie, oh, right.
Judging things by their outcome. It was stated in a different way, I think.
Yeah.
Judging your day according to the satisfaction of your desires.
Right.
And the other one, the other one was your need to be right.
Right.
Yeah. Attachment to attachment to being right.
Attachment to
being right. Yeah. Right.
So it's like working with those. I've worked with my attachment to being right, and that one has that has loosened some in some tangible ways for me over the years, which is nice to see. You know, sometimes we practice on faith. You know that. Well, I hope it's changing. I don't know. It takes a long time to see that change. But then I also started working with being the star of my own movie. I renounced being the star of my own movie, which I thought for a long time, I'm like, this just isn't me. It just isn't a big one for me at all. And I started working with it. And then over time, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, wait, no, this is really a big one for me. So, you know, so sometimes we have that. And we work with different ones at different times. So thanks for that, Katie. Okay. So if there's one thing I know about Marin Sangha, you all are pretty grounded in the Dhamma, the Buddhist teachings. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Four Noble Truths and dependent origination. Okay. Very high level. Don't worry. I'm certainly not going to exhaust these topics in the next 5 or 10 minutes. So the first noble truth, the truth is that there is dukkha. There is that which is unsatisfactory, physically painful, emotionally painful, not getting what one wants, getting what one doesn't want, having to put up with people who we find difficult, all of that kind of stuff. Having a body and our attachment to the body and this sense of self. So there can be, could be some initial level of judging, comparing, and fixing there. But I think a lot of it is in the second noble truth, the cause of dukkha. The cause of dukkha is craving. And I think what happens with judging, comparing, and fixing is that we somehow invest in it. We take that judging message or that comparing message or that fixing message to have some truth, and then we're off. We are off to the races. We get caught in craving, craving for sense pleasure. There are three types of craving, and craving is the cause of dukkha, or at least an important cause of dukkha. Craving for sense pleasure, right? Good food, just one glass of wine, okay? One glass of nice wine. Maybe it's sex for you. Maybe it's that game of tennis, right? Or writing that great song, or that poem. I'm going to write that poem, whatever it is, okay? Beautiful sights, whatever it may be for you. And then craving for becoming, and craving for non-becoming. That's a little more, it can be a little harder to understand for people sometimes. That becoming is as we're starting to get this sense of wanting ourselves to be a certain way and wanting to create this self that is that way. Yeah. And then the non-becoming is when whatever we've gotten ourselves into, get me out of here. This is miserable. I can't stand it. Okay. We hear about, if jealousy is a thing for us, we hear about a friend and what they said to another friend, and that makes us really jealous, and we're caught in this thing, oh, craving for non-becoming, becoming, right? We want to disappear, right? So the third noble truth, the ceasing of dukkha, which happens in this moment, right? There may be a time when it ceases for us completely. If so, please come back to me and answer some of my questions and offer me some guidance. But at the very least, it does cease for us in this moment, and it'll happen for us. This does happen for us. So as we turn toward our experience, the cause of dukkha can fall away, and then dukkha can fall away. If we're caught in craving, can't be cessation if we're caught in craving. And then the fourth noble truth, the way to the end of dukkha, the noble eightfold path, where the rubber meets the road, our practice, how we engage with the Dhamma on the cushion and in the world, coming to Sangha, anything that helps to move us forward on the path or keep us on the path. We're not looking for outcome. One of Philip's sayings that I remember him saying kind of only in the last couple few years, but we're practicing practice. We're not practicing results. That one has brought so much freedom for me. Dana has one that she will drop into her guided meditations. We're playing the long game, sweetheart. We're playing the long game. There's any desire to get ahead, to make something happen, anything like that. Now I can just rest down and just let the dance of experience come in front of me. So the second noble truth with the craving there, that interfaces with the chain of dependent origination. Dependent origination is kind of the Buddhist story of how we come to be and how we die. There are many ways to describe it. I think that's how I'm describing it now. It's the chain of causality, these causal links, and how one can lead to the other, to the next, to the next. Craving is on that wheel of dependent origination. As well as in the Four Noble Truths, which oftentimes is a big hint from the Buddha. If something is on, starts showing up on multiple lists or plays an important role on a few important lists, like the Four Noble Truths and the 12 Links of Dependent Origination, pay attention. So, can I? Yes, it looks like I can share my screen here. Let's see. Okay. And I'm just going to share my screen real quickly so we can look at this here. The links of dependent origination. This is usually the first link, although it is a circle or a spiral. We tend to go around and around. This is kind of the wheel of samsara, the beginningless round of rebirths here, okay? And it goes through formations. It starts with ignorance and then into formations or fabrications and then consciousness and mentality, materiality, etc. And the six senses and then contact. Contact is what happens. Contact is happening for all of us all the time. It's what happens when there is a sense object and a sense organ and sense consciousness. So there's a sense object for you, which is seeing this picture on the screen. There's a sense organ, which is the eyes, and there's eye consciousness. Okay. And when those three things come together, then there is contact. Right there in that moment, there's contact. Those three things are required. We have that around sounds. We have it around all the experiences of the six senses. There is that contact. And when there is contact, there is Vedana, feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. Okay. And once again, this is said to be present in every moment's experience. Vedana is. The issue with Vedana is that it leads right over here to craving. There's some good news here too. And this is part of why we practice. We can take our snips, we can take our scissors or our snipping tool or our wire cutters, and we can break the link right here by being just with the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and not going off into craving, not going into the hindrances. This is possible for all of us. And I know many of you have heard stories from you specifically. Those of you who haven't heard them from, I am pretty certain you have had times when you have broken this link, when you have just been with the feeling tone and not gone into craving. What happens with craving is once we get there, then goes into clinging, becoming, birth. And with birth comes aging, sickness, and death. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. All of those stories. Okay. So judging, comparing, and fixing can come up and it can launch us here. It may already be the beginnings of craving, I don't know, but we can't, as we notice it, we can simply let go of it, let it run out. With practice, we get better at that. It's not, there's no expectation that you're going to do this and it's going to end and then you'll be done with craving. If that happens for you, please do. As I said before, please come get me. I would really love to hear from you. Okay, I'm going to stop sharing there. Okay. So easy to get caught in that and judging, comparing, and fixing. You know, when I talked about that being in that meeting with the other teachers and feeling intimidated, that comparing, I had gone into becoming and I had started taking birth. So there is some amount of burn that comes with that, that I just had to be with. And I was able to unhook feeding that anymore, which was very helpful. So what helps with judging, comparing, and fixing? I don't know what your take was on the arriving, available, aligning part of the meditation, but I really strongly, strongly, strongly encourage you to engage with this. If you have any inclination, do this for 5 minutes at the beginning of your sit. Or, you know, you could go to the Nine Bodies website and just listen to the aligning part. That's not the Nine Bodies. And you all know arriving. You know what it feels like when you're more in the present and when you're less in the present. And you know, you've heard plenty of Dharma talks. You know what has meaning to you in the Dhamma. And, you know, align with that stuff, with those things. That can really be something that gives us a wholesome ground for us to rest in, so that when the judging, comparing, and fixing gets up, it's like, do I really want to go down that road? You know, do I really want to do that? And over time, this may have been your first exposure to arriving, or you may have heard it several times or many times. Over time, you can definitely develop a felt sense to that. And really, you can develop that felt sense of this as a ground for your practice. So I really want to encourage that. And it's not about your super ego, your sweet ego, your committee member does not get to do that, use that to judge you. Because you supposedly do not align strongly enough or do not get grounded enough from that, okay? So if that comes up, you just tell it to back off. Oh, sweetheart, okay. Noticing if the judging is happening or if there are multiple layers of there's judging and comparing and fixing all in a tangle there, just noticing that. The grounding in the physical body can really help. And as we practice on the cushion, this also will have more of an effect in daily life. And whatever that is for you, that may be doing that, like Philip speaks about the earth element resting on earth, that may be helpful for you. Or it could be that you practice with another teacher. You go to their YouTube channel or their drop-in sits in the morning. And it's their sense of the sense of spaciousness that they communicate just through their few words that they offer in the guidance. Maybe that's it for you. And that's your reminder. Some other things that are helpful are soothing and settling. How do we soothe ourselves? How do we settle ourselves when sweet ego, when that committee member is up and somehow has grabbed hold of the steering wheel? I have this image in my mind of like my committee, like being on a large school bus. And sometimes just somehow I get tricked and I get out of the driver's seat and somebody else grabs the wheel and it's like, oh, okay, let's get back here. Okay, thank you. I know that was really fun. Yes, I appreciate that. Okay, all right, let's get back. You have a seat over there. Put your seatbelt on, please. Okay. Yeah. Well, certain images may be that way to you. The resting down, you know, when that happens, resting down, resting in something deeper. The ego's going to do what the ego does. It's just part of this existence. A certain image may be useful, like seeing it could be like the rock tumbler thing. I've spoken about that when I've been here before, the rock tumbler where you put the rocks in there and they all get tumbled and they come out polished. Or imagining a riverbed. Imagining some riverbed that you've seen with rocks or the boulders at the bottom there. The river is flowing through. It could even be very strong. But the rocks sit there at the bottom. They just rest there. And whatever some reminder of that is for you. Getting a stone for your altar, something that reminds you of grounding or settling, something like that. And, you know, one thing that has been really useful for me is just using simple internal verbal messages. When judging, comparing, fixing comes up, oh, sweetheart, or it's okay. Whatever it is. Joseph has used that it's okay one. Joseph Goldstein has used that. So it's fully Dharma approved there. Okay. Whatever small, simple saying does that for you. Imagine some deeper self or something like that being at the getting that committee member out of the driver's seat and having it sit down. No judging of that committee member. It's one thing we have to be clear about. It's doing its thing. It's just doing its thing. We want to respond to that firmly, but with as much kindness and compassion as possible. I mentioned earlier, Dana saying, we're playing the long game, sweetheart. Sometimes if I ever get caught in comparing myself or trying to make something happen in practice, I'll just let you know right now, trying to make something in practice doesn't work. So let go of that one, right? Whatever helps to soothe that part. Some reminder to yourself that in the aligning, maybe you align with the Four Noble Truths, with the truth of dukkha. There's dukkha. There is dukkha. There's the cause of dukkha. There's the end of dukkha. There's the way to the end of dukkha. Whatever it is that helps you in that way. So working with these and or with other ones, we're taking an attitude of exploring. We're taking just an attitude of seeing, what works over time, over a long time frame. Another thing. If you can't be patient with yourself, can you imagine Philip or Gil or Dana or whoever the other teacher or teachers are, imagine them being patient and compassionate with you. Whoever they are. Oh, Bill. Oh, Vita. It's okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, another thing, like a reflection that I have done is I was reading a discourse recently, and the Buddha was talking about the five hindrances. And he was talking about all these different ways to read them. There were a bunch of different discourses on the hindrances, and I was kind of looking at these and comparing them. And then I was just kind of struck by the fact that all of these had been discourses that he gave to fully ordained monastics. Okay. Folks with years of practice who are practicing kind of all day, every day. That was their job. Right? And they're still facing this. This is a part of being human. This is simply a part of being human, part of our human experience. So whatever reminders are useful for you can be helpful. We have time for maybe one or two questions, if anybody has questions or comments. Barbara.
Yeah, one of the things that I found recently that's helpful is just to remember, this is always, this fixing or comparing, it always leads to suffering. And I had a really specific experience where all my life, I've lost things. I have ADD. I'm always losing things and misplacing things. And I always go, oh, Barbara, I'm going to be so stupid. I'm an idiot. Oh. And so I've gone swimming. We were in the mountains. And I left my backpack at the beach, the rocks. I'd have to go back over the rocks to get them. And I was going to be late and Bill was going to be angry. And suddenly, and I was starting to go, oh, wait a minute. I said, wait a minute. That just leads to suffering. I'm not training myself to do it. I have been training myself for 70 years not to lose things by judging myself and telling myself how terrible I was.
Right.
So I just stopped. And I went back and got my backpack. And I enjoyed the view as I went back. And it was like, oh, wonderful. Yeah.
Wonderful. That's a great story. Yeah, Corey.
Thanks, Art. That was really wonderful. I really appreciate it. Renunciation. You know, just in the process of renunciation, does it start with what you were just talking about? Does it start with just accepting? I mean, it seems like that maybe that's an integral part of renunciation, is just to kind of go, oh, honey, you're just being human. And then renunciate, or is that kind of different or not?
You can't let go. It's not, the renunciation that Buddha was talking about did not have aversion in it, right? So if that's there, we need the soothing first, or often we do. And I have found that this kind of soothing, self-soothing and settling is really, I think it's an expression of the Brahma-Viharas, or an expression of the Brahma-Viharas. It's certainly, I've noticed it really softening my heart. And then renunciation, seeing how stuck we are. We want to let go. Oh, let go. And sometimes the letting go happens, and sometimes it doesn't. So being with the experience, with mindfulness, and over time, it will correct itself over time. Yeah, not over our chosen time frame, right? We know that much, but it will over time. Okay. Mary, last one. We're going to go into our metta.
So, I for a while, I didn't think I was a fixer, and I'm not. And I, there's a part of me that really thought that I wasn't in a way. Mm-hmm. But what I realized was, for me, there's things that you can take care of, and then there's fixing, which are different. And what I realized is, for me, the fixing always has this piece of aversion. That it starts out with that. And I've been trying to working with what that felt sense of aversion is actually like. And it's interesting because sometimes I feel like it's for me, there's tension. Sometimes it's even tension in the shoulders. Sometimes there's tension in my gut, but I'm still working on being able to recognize what that is. Because, I mean, there's some situations that you do need, like, discern to take care of. And then there's that fixing where it's got a whole other kind of, it's got like this aversive kind of yucky energy with it.
Yeah.
And I found sometimes it almost feels like there's a little bit of both going on.
Uh-huh. Entirely possible.
And how to at least stay why am I feeling so aversive? Why is this so? I mean, a lot of times it's because whatever it is going on is unpleasant. I don't want it, right? And I need to fix it. But mm-hmm. but like sometimes it's interesting. I don't even know why I'm thinking that it's unpleasant. And I mean, do you have that experience, and what helps you to kind of parse between the two?
I've certainly had the experience of feeling like both of them are there. And sometimes when I'm clear about that and able to discern enough that the two are there, right? Can I lean towards doing it from a wholesome place? Right? Or not? And if not, then, you know, I'm trying to play with, do I have to do it at all? Sometimes I do it and just take my lumps, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's that you're very much engaged with that, right? Because mm-hmm. you know the energetic feeling of that. You know exactly. what it feels like internally, right?
Yes.
So just feeling for that. And maybe it's that you play with it. There's like some field take that sliver, like Philip has talked about. He doesn't use that word, but find some way to rein that in for you, a place where you do a lot of fixing. Like for me, I noticed that I was like with the dishwasher, putting dishes in the dishwasher. I am the neat, organized person. Every dish goes in and every bowl goes in the same thing. And there's always one, you know, it's that kind of thing. Yeah, like Bill. There we go. Mm-hmm. And my wife is not, that's not how she loads dishes in the dishwasher. Do I really need to reload those dishes for her? No. I was doing that. You know, or the silverware, you know, it's like, no, that's fixing. And so just mm-hmm. noticing that and then pulling back.
Yeah.
So we have more choice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do with itches.
With what?
Itches.
With itches. Yes.
Right. Just, yeah. You know, yeah. Just to see. Yep.
Yeah.
It's funny, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Bill. And thank you, Art. Excuse me.
You're very welcome.